Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Do you like the show and you want to help support us? Do you want us to stay ad-free? Do you want extra episodes every month? Of course you do. Then head over to patreon.com/nerdcaveretro and become a Patreon supporter of this very show. Greetings, programs. It is time for another episode of the Nerd Cave Retro Show, and my name is Jason Robbins.
And my name is Derek Diamond.
And tonight is a very special, special episode because we have a couple of guests with us tonight. We're not going to be talking about video games. We're going to be talking about wrestling. So I think to start us off, we have an actual wrestler with us here tonight. We have the man himself, Mr. Joey Image.
I was expecting you to announce Wally's name. Good evening. How is everyone? Hello from New Jersey.
Yes, from the Garden
State. I was
going
to say welcome to New Jersey, but none of you are here.
No, I wish I could be, though. It'd be nice.
Me too, man.
And Joey's going to be getting married in, what, like 2 weeks?
You still got 10 days to get here, man. 10 days.
I wish it could happen. I doubt it's going to happen. I just don't have the money.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
But our other guest tonight is a Nerd Cave Retro, the Nerd Cave Retro official fact checker and podcasting the alumnus, Mr. Wally Phelps.
Yeah, you haven't needed it lately.
Yeah, we've been pretty good lately.
Yeah, you have. How dare you?
I know. I'm taking jobs away from real Americans.
Right.
So
speaking of real American.
That's right. I was just about to get to that. So tonight we're divided up into two teams, Team 80s Wrestling and Team Attitude Era. And
hold on a second. Hold on a second. We're not here to debate who has the best chicken sandwich.
We could debate that afterwards.
I think Arby's. I would assume Arby's.
No.
No.
I planned for the wrong show then.
Yeah,
I guess I'll have to settle for the wrestling one instead.
Well, there's a lot of chicken wings in wrestling.
That's right.
That's very true.
But up first, we have Jay Funktastic and at what is it? That Image Guy is your still your Twitter handle at That Image Guy.
Williams TV.
That's right, with a combined weight of, I don't know, like probably 500 pounds.
I wouldn't say 200.
We have the Mega Powers. You gotta take a stand, you don't have to hide. And in the other corner, we have weighing in at...
No.
another 500 pounds. We have at Derek underscore Diamond and at the real big... Ooh, did I stop that? Oops, sorry. At the real big wall, the Job Squad. The next match is scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
45-minute time limit. And, yeah, let's go ahead and start.
You don't have a bell sound effect?
No, I didn't get one.
Well, this is ridiculous.
My bad.
We can't even start.
Well, let's go ahead and start with our guests first. I have a couple of questions that I'd like to get into first. Because, you know, me and Joey are a little bit older. Actually, we're what, about a week apart on our birthdays?
Yeah, and, something like that.
Very so close. We both grew up with the 80s era wrestling. And Joey, just starting with you, I mean, you were a professional wrestler, retired now. And what was some of your earliest wrestling memories and your favorite wrestling moment?
Dude, I remember the first show I went to still. It was sometime in 1988 or 87 at Rockland County Community College, which is still a thing, 15, 20 minutes from where I live. And they had a gigantic like auditorium, so they had a show in there. And the main event was Bam Bam Bigelow versus the One Man Gang. Ooh. And I remember One Man Gang won. And then years later, when I got into the business, and I was told the good guys always win the last match to send the fans home happy. I could never understand why that didn't happen. I didn't think anything of it until I started training, and I'm like, that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Did you ever
and
play?
I forgot what your question was.
Did you ever get to play a good guy, or were you always the heel?
No, I did for like one summer in 2004. That's about it.
What do you prefer, playing the heel?
Oh yes,
much more fun.
Yeah, because I can do whatever I want. Like when I was a quote unquote good guy, I was doing the. Myself and my tag team partner, Eric Andretti, were the T-Birds. So we were straight out of Rydell High School with our greasy hair and our combs in our pockets and cigarette packs rolled up in our sleeves.
Nice.
And just plain white T-shirts and blue jeans. And it was a lot of fun, but it wasn't as fun as like coming out and like spitting on people and being... You know, people kind of expect that and not getting beat up for it.
But it can be pretty scary being a heel, though, too, because some people kind of get really into it. And I've heard some horror stories from some of the guys that were heels that had to deal with people like outside the arena. Did you ever have to deal with anybody like that?
Oh, yes. I can tell you the whole story. It's a little bit long. I could shorten it. Basically, I was a bad guy working in Binghamton, New York in 2000. I worked in Binghamton, for a company called Excite Wrestling, which is still around today. In fact, they just did some live radio show thing today. And I worked there for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. They had another name before that, 3DW, which I don't even know what the hell that stood for, but I was there for that company as well. And so anyway, I come out one day and there's this big 8-man tag team match and I'm on the side of the 4 bad guys, obviously. And I go out and I make my entrance and Binghamton, New York, before I actually get into the story, if any of you guys are familiar with ECW and yeah, their fan base, I think the fans were more like R-rated than the wrestling. So, those were the kind, though. Well, those still are the kind of fans that are found in Binghamton, New York. Which, when I first started training, I wanted to work for ECW. So when I heard like, "Oh, yo, Binghamton's like an ECW Philadelphia crowd," I'm like, "Oh, this is amazing! This is terrific! I'm going to get so much heat here. It's going to be great." So then, one of the situations that Jay just mentioned came up, and I didn't know what to do. So I came out, some little girl had a slice of pizza in the front row. I grabbed it. I took a gigantic bite. I threw it back at her face.
Oh.
And I mean, it didn't even like, I didn't even get it to my mouth yet. And like the mother stood up and there was another woman next to her who I found out later was the mother's sister. So the little girl's aunt and the father on the other side, and they all stood up. And by the time I turned around to like face the opposite side where the father was, so I was facing the mother and the little girl, and then the father and the mother, sister, and the aunt were to my left. So I didn't even see them like out of the corner of my eye or nothing. But by the time I turn around to my left, the father already had one leg over the rail to try to get to me.
Wow.
And the mother is screaming every four-letter word in the book. I mean, I was called the C word a million times. I've never heard a guy called that unless you're in
wow.
England. But I was wow. called that. I was called like the F word, not the F-U-C-K word, but the other one that's not PC anymore yeah. or whatever. I was called an asshole. I was called like a piece of garbage. Every piece of anything you could think of, piece of garbage, piece of shit, piece of crap, whatever. And I was like, so in my head, I said to the referee, who is my friend Chris, I go, dude, this is the kind of heat I've always wanted, and now I don't know what to do with it, and I'm terrified. So anyway, so we go through the match, and again, it was an 8-man tag, so it wasn't like a 5-minute thing. We were out there for probably 15 to 18 minutes, maybe. And the whole time, the little girl's mother is just all, like on me, like verbally, just like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to find you. And I'm like yelling, like, lady, it's a $1 slice of pizza. Like, go buy another slice. Like, what's the big deal? I'll give you a dollar. You know, in fact, in the next match, somebody came out during the match and tried to offer her a dollar and apologized for it, and she wouldn't take it.
Wow.
Wow.
So long story short, they wanted to kill me. I end up walking out, and in fact, well, here's one funny moment of the night of that situation, I should say. I'm walking out. So now when you come out, so if I come from the back out to the arena area, this woman and her family was seated on my right. So when I go back out, they're obviously on my left. So I am standing to the right of the referee, and I'm like, dude, I need you to stand on my left because I don't know what the hell is going to happen when I walk past this family. So, wow. So he does, and she gets up, and I've never seen – I mean, I haven't – you know, I never saw like Daryl Strawberry swing like this. This woman swung a right hand that Mike Tyson would have ran away.
Jesus.
And I moved out of the way, and she hit the referee.
Wow.
Whoa. And the referee turns around to her and goes, what the hell did I do? And then she Damn. Actually yelled out, I'm so sorry. It was hilarious.
Wow.
Oh, man. So, yeah. So I went to the back, and then whatever. I didn't come out again, not even during intermission to sell pictures or whatever. And then later on, towards the end of the show, the promoter comes up to me. He's like, listen, I need you to do me a favor. First of all, go downstairs and go out the side door into like the emergency driveway or whatever. It was at a Knights of Columbus / VFW building.
Yeah.
So they have like a driveway on the side where I don't know what the hell it's for. It's just some kind of driveway on the side of the building. You know what? It's where they have their dumpsters. So it's so for a garbage truck to pull up to be able to empty the dumpsters out. So it's a wide driveway. So he's like, I need you to go downstairs and go out that side door through the driveway, and then but give it about a half hour first before you leave. And I'm like, why? Everyone's gonna be leaving, everyone's going to the bar afterwards. You know, I'm gonna be the only idiot that's, you know, late, that's a half hour late or whatever. I'm like, what's the problem? He's like, well, that family is outside waiting for you. And I go, how is that possible? Like, how do they know where? I said, what are they, just waiting by the front door for everyone to come out? And he's like, no, they're right by your car. So I go, there's no possible way that they can know what car is mine. And he's like, well, I can tell you exactly how they know what car is yours. He goes, you're the only guy the entire show that was announced from New Jersey, and you're the only car in the entire parking lot with New Jersey license plates.
Wow.
They're like, oh, wow. You got to be kidding me. So I waited probably like 20, 25 minutes and went out, and they were gone, and wow. I left. And then there's a second part to the story that's kind of long, too, so I can tell you, or I can hold it, whatever you want.
Oh, I'll tell you what we can do. Let's do another show one night, and yeah. We'll do since me and you both kind of had parallel careers, I mean, I was a musician, but you were a wrestler. Let's have a show where we both reveal some crazy behind the scenes.
Oh, that would be awesome. I can tell you guys the rest of the story off air when we're done if you want.
All right.
It's actually very funny. It has a happy ending.
All right. That sounds good. Well, we might get to it at the end if we have time.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Wally.
Yes.
What is your earliest wrestling memory?
To be completely honest, it's just being like 5 years old and watching WWF television with my uncle. But I had no idea what was going on. I mean, I remember the bright colors and the loud music and the people screaming and the fact that there were toys available.
What year would this be?
Like 85, 86.
Okay.
That time frame. I mean, I remember, I only remember three wrestlers, and that's Hulk Hogan, the Iron Sheik, and the Junkyard Dog.
Yes.
And that's the earliest I can remember.
Yeah. So did you go to any shows or anything? I mean, I know your uncle is, does he care if we say his name on here?
Oh, I don't know.
Your Uncle Gerald, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he, because he goes to the wrestling shows to the local ones here for a Diamond Championship Wrestling. And I love going with him because he always cheers for the bad guys.
Right. And
did he ever take you to any shows back then when you were really little?
No, because there really wasn't anything around here at that time.
Not necessarily. I mean, when I remember some of my earliest wrestling memories were of Mid-South Wrestling.
Yeah, but
and they used to come to the Coliseum a lot. I remember my uncle taking me many times to the Coliseum, and I used to see Ted DiBiase before he was the Million Dollar Man. And see, this was all before, right around the time that I'm going to call it the WWF because that's what it was when
this
I was a kid.
This is the era we're talking.
Yeah, and before they kind of took over everything, there was wrestling was kind of broken up into different territories, and a lot of these wrestlers went on to become WWF wrestlers. But the ones in Mid-South Wrestling that I remember were, you know, going to see Ted DiBiase, the Junkyard Dog, Dr. Death. Let's see who, the Great Kabuki. And I remember he scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. I saw him at the Coliseum. And, Joey, do you remember the Great Kabuki?
Of course.
Oh man, that dude was frightening. If you ever get a chance to look up some old videos, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole of the Great Kabuki one night. Just trying to remember, you know, like bring back some of those memories when I was a kid.
I love Mid-South. I still watch. Like, I have a collection of Mid-South Wrestling TV.
Oh, really?
That I still watch. Yeah, you may have access to it actually, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because see, I remember around that time, you know, around 84, 85, I was really into Mid-South Wrestling, and I think it was called like NWA or something like that. That had Sting and
NWA was like the big deal. The big like WWF rival.
Yeah, and they had the Nature Boy and a couple other guys. I think Rick Steiner was there. Yep.
Both of the Steiners.
And yeah,
they were a tag team at that point.
Did Mid-South Wrestling have the Fabulous Thunder? Was it the Fabulous? What were they
called? Fabulous Ones? Stan Lane and Steve Kern?
No, that was the Three Brothers.
Freebirds?
The Fabulous Freebirds.
They worked everywhere.
Yeah, they were all over the place.
But I remember around that time, you know, I was watching those wrestling shows. I didn't really know of WWF yet until my uncle was really into wrestling, and like I said, he would take me to the different shows and stuff at the Coliseum, and he had these VHS tapes of the WWF, and it was all the highlights from like WrestleMania 1 and 2. It was like 3 or 4 different tapes. It was a bunch of Hulk. It was like one tape was called Hulkamania highlights or something, and it was like all Hulk Hogan stuff. And I wore these tapes out, man. And I think he got it off, you know those old commercials back in the day, like
you know, Time Life videos or whatever, and it's like three easy payments of $19.99 or whatever, and you get like all these like different collections. That's what I think that was.
Well, it was Coliseum Video.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Look, I've been studying wrestling history, but yes, Coliseum Video.
But they were Coliseum Videos based in New Jersey.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't know that.
So Jay, I just checked, and you actually do have access to that. So I have all of the Mid-South television shows from 1981 to 1987.
Oh, I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Maybe not all of them. Okay, I have most of them.
Wally, you want to come over and have a wrestle-thon?
You know, honestly, that sounds fun.
I don't actually know when it started, so I don't know if I have all of it or not. But I have beginning December of 1981 going through to 1987.
Oh my God!
So December 26th, 1987 is the last one. Actually, Mid-South. That's right. I forgot about this part. Mid-South changed its name to the UWF.
That's right. After, I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have up until December 26, 1987, when it was UWF.
Yeah. That's actually what I remember it more being called, was the UWF.
Hmm. Yeah. They used to show, they used to air their shows on, here it was the MSG network. And they were in, like, they did some shows, like, actually in my area, in, like, a hotel that had a giant convention hall kind of room in it. I don't even know what you call it. And they did some shows there, and they did a lot of stuff, obviously, in Mid-South, where after they were no longer called Mid-South, but it was still on, I guess it was still an MSG network. I guess they still had the same television deals or whatever, but
yeah,
they just had a new name, a new ownership.
Well, they used to show it here on the local, the local station here, like Saturday nights or whatever. And I used to watch it all the time. But I remember it was because my uncle gave me those tapes. Those WWF tapes that I really got into the WWF and like fell in love with like Hulk Hogan and, you know, Andre the Giant, especially like Rowdy Roddy Piper, and still just remember like my uncle got WrestleMania 3 on pay-per-view and just watching that live, like it's still burned in my memory that moment when Hulk Hogan body slams Andre the Giant. Like there are few moments in your life that are absolute pure joy that are burned into your memory for the rest of your life. And I've only felt that one other time was when the Saints won the Super Bowl.
Oh.
And man, when he lifted up Andre the Giant and slammed him, I came up out of my seat. It was one of those things like you're a little kid, and I think I was what, like 8 years old at the time. I'm pretty sure my mom and dad were sick of me talking about it because like I talked about it like 4 days straight after that. And I went back and watched that match not too long ago on YouTube, and I got a different perspective on it now after watching that Andre the Giant documentary. And
the HBO one?
Yeah, and you go back and you watch that match, and it's so slow, and you can really like tell that Andre the Giant was just, he was in so much pain during that match, and I'm just like,
even though I was watching it, like I was physically watching with my own eyes, I didn't even realize like they're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, like now there's like 8,000 flips off of like the top of the building, you know, through, you know, 6 pounds of broken glass that's
going
to cut your eyeballs out. And like back then it was like Hogan took like one body slam and he sold for like 4 minutes. And like, man, that's just 4 minutes of resting.
Really. Oh, yeah. Those dudes were selling.
But back
selling
then
that.
I'm like, that's great. Like, wow, that's amazing. It hurts so much.
Those dudes were selling.
I never even realized it.
But yeah, sorry to take up so much time. Let's move on to Derek. And Derek, what's your earliest wrestling memory and favorite wrestling moment?
So I remember clear as day the first time I ever saw wrestling on TV. And much like Jason and Wally, my uncle introduced me to the same uncle who introduced me to Star Wars.
Does everybody have that uncle?
God, that's a good dude. That's a good dude, man.
Yeah.
I had that in my brother. Because my brother was a gigantic fan when I was growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I got into it.
I remember it was February of 1998. I was 11 years old at the time.
Oh my God,
and it was
98. Jesus.
I was
I'm the baby of the podcast.
I'm like, man, I got into, you know, I went to my first show when I was 7 years old. That was 1984. Oh. You're like, oh yeah, 98. I'm like, holy Christ, we're old. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh I'm the run of the podcast. But it was WCW Monday Nitro, and I remember at the very end of the show, Sting coming down from the rafters and just beating the hell out of the NWO with a baseball bat. And I thought, holy crap, what am I watching? I want more. So I watched strictly WCW for a few months, and then I was introduced to the WWF with, you know, Stone Cold was white hot at the time. It was right before The Rock really started to become a big deal. And yeah, I remember Undertaker and Kane both scaring the crap out of me, Kane especially. But, you know, I just fell in love with the storylines and, you know, the characters and everything. And then I watched ECW through its last probably 5 or 6 months of being around before they went bankrupt. And, you know, I've kept up with it ever since. And my favorite moment is probably a little biased just because I was there in person, but it actually didn't happen in the Attitude Era. I was at WrestleMania 24 in Orlando when Shawn Michaels retired Ric Flair.
Oh yeah, that's that match awesome. That match makes me cry.
Yeah, it was very emotional in that arena when that happened. But that's easily my favorite moment. If I had to pick televised moment, there's so many good ones. I mean, most anything with Stone Cold and The Rock was great. But if I had to pick one from the Attitude Era, it was probably the night that Chris Jericho debuted and interrupted The Rock, just because their promo back and forth was amazing.
That was great, because it's like, I remember, you know, that had a build up of that, you know.
Oh, the Millennium Clock.
It was a countdown, and it was playing off of the Y2K thing.
Yeah.
And then he just kind of showed up right in the middle of The Rock's promo.
I remember when the words Jericho popped up on the Titantron, the roar from that crowd was just
right.
It was crazy.
And The Rock says, "Well, I'm sorry, what was your name?" "Well, my name, it doesn't matter what your name is.
Oh, man. I mean, there's some good moments there, but I was really not that into wrestling anymore by that point. And that's the whole point of this kind of this discussion tonight. I feel like, you know, the 80s era, like, my favorite wrestler when I was really little was, like, the Junkyard Dog. And then as I got older, it became, you know, Roddy Piper and Hulk Hogan. Of course, the Macho Man. Like, I can go back now, and those Macho Man promos are genius level
cream of the crop
comedy. Like, oh yeah, the cream of the crop, yeah. And dude, the cup of coffee in the big time, yeah. Dude, you can't, like, I don't know what it was. It was like the characters were so over the top and colorful, and just, you had all the different storylines, like the Mega Powers storyline, you know, just all that kind of stuff going on in the 80s. And then you move to the Attitude Era. And to me, it felt more like, I don't know, that whole era became more kind of dude bro, if that makes any sense.
I mean, there are aspects of dude brodery.
Like, it became wrestling for dudes that are the kind of dudes that now wear Affliction t-shirts.
I mean, you're talking specifically about DX right now, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, thoughts. Whoever wants to.
I think with, I guess I'll start, but I think with the Attitude Era, and I'm sure the 80s had a part of that too, but the 90s and the Attitude Era specifically was very much a reflection of its time, because you had that, you know, almost too edgy for TV kind of feel everywhere. You had the Jerry Springer Show.
Yeah.
I think UFC was really starting to become popular at the time. You had these adult, you know, borderline violent and sexual shows that were on, you know, basic TV at the time. And the WWF reinvented itself through that. And there's a lot of the Attitude Era that I go back and watch And I think, well, it doesn't hold up quite like I remember. Stuff with, you know, the top guys like Stone Cold, The Rock, Triple H, Kurt Angle, like all that stuff still holds up and it's fantastic. But it did have its fair share of, you know, over the top moments that I'm like, I don't know if that was really the greatest thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that it had to evolve with the times, but I don't know. There was some sort of like, I guess more of an innocent time in the 80s when I don't know. It's hard to describe. Like, Joey, what are your thoughts on those two eras?
Man, I think the 80s were so, I think the 80s and like early 90s were so much better. Only because nobody knew anything. You know, once like mid-90s came along, the internet was kind of in its infancy. Everyone knew, and there were like scripts traded online, which I managed to get a couple of WCW Monday Nitro scripts at the time, like just that people were sharing. And like, you know, everything was on dial-up, so you had to like know who to download stuff from or whatever. And like, you know, once the end of the 90s hit, it was like almost completely ruined as far as you know, storylines and the illusion or whatever. But I'm like, I don't want to say I'm a purist, because I love all years of wrestling, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't love all forms, but I love like all eras. So I don't want to say I'm like a purist, but part of me is a purist. So I would love to just snap my fingers or wave a magic wand and go back to the time where no one knew anything was, you know, set up or worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because see, well, oh, go ahead, Wally.
Well, I was going to say, it's, I know from like, even before it became officially, you know, until Vince McMahon came on TV and said his famous, you know, I believe that our audience doesn't want their intelligence insulted anymore. That whole thing that he did that one time.
You even got the voice inflection right. That's amazing.
I'm very good at that kind of thing. But when you go back before that, just before that, there's always that little piece of you is like, well, I knew that was supposed to happen, but I don't know if that was.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And WCW did a really good job of that when the NWO first came to be. Just things like when they would like toss Rey Mysterio Jr. into a production truck, or and you're like, well, I mean, how do you protect yourself from that?
Yeah.
You know, just whenever you see
the police were called during that
throwing
incident.
Mankind yeah. off of the Hell in the Cell.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
How you know, was that supposed to happen? You know,
no, it was not.
and really, I think that's why I like the era so much, is that it kept you guessing. It kept you going, well, okay, I think this part was supposed to happen.
But that's the thing. It got to the point where it felt like it had to become so extreme to keep people's attention.
Right.
That it was
one
putting
thing atop the previous thing.
Yeah. And it was putting people's lives in danger.
Yeah. Well, but I can't help but think that it always was that way, but not to the extent that it was. Like, for it, yeah, you didn't have Buddy Rogers jumping off of the top of the set on top of Ray Stevens, but you are going to have you know, straight up brawls, or like people who had missing limbs, and you know, just all that kind of stuff has always been something that's going on in the wrestling industry. It's just that you're right. People's careers are so much shorter now.
Yeah.
And it is because of the outrageous.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare.
PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Stunts they would pull on themselves.
Yeah, the things that they would do to themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine the pain that guys like Mick Foley and the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian wake up in every day.
Right. Oh my God. One of my favorite wrestling moments is that tables, ladders, chairs match where I think it was Edge speared Jeff Hardy off the like he was hanging from the belt at the top of the arena and Edge was on the top of the ladder. And what is the obvious thing you do? You jump off the ladder and spear him into the mat. Obviously.
I don't know if that's the most obvious thing I would have thought of. Yeah, right.
Like, how do I stop this guy from winning? Murder.
Well, I remember when that moment happened, because that was back when flash photography was still a thing, just seeing all the flash bulbs going off like crazy in the arena.
Oh, absolutely.
And just seeing the first, 10 rows of people just stand up like, holy shit.
Like, we have witnessed a murder.
Yeah.
He is dead.
I don't know. There's just something, like Joey was talking about purity. Like, I love to go back and watch those old wrestling videos where, it would be the WWF at Madison Square Gardens, and it would just be lights on the ring, and then like the entire crowd is in darkness.
Yeah,
like that kind of low budget.
Yeah, that's the way I wish it still was.
Yeah, and I don't know, now it's like everything has to be a spectacle, but back
it
then,
is overproduced. I will say that.
Yeah,
I think boxing still does something similar to that, right? Doesn't boxing dim the lights? Maybe not all the way down, but they dim it a little bit, and they just keep the ring kind of lit.
Yeah, I think you're right.
UFC does that, still did that.
Because they know where the focus is supposed to be.
You would get the big spectacle at like WrestleMania or SummerSlam or a Saturday night main event. Regular just shows and, the superstars of wrestling and shows like that, it would just be the lights on the ring. The crowd would be dark, and then you would have the big WWF symbol like above the dressing room, like the entrance area. And like, I don't know, just something about that visual, it just brings me back to a certain spot of my life as a little kid.
Yeah,
but there
I wish
is
it was
something
still like that.
To be said for remarkably expensive pyrotechnics.
But that's the thing. It's like, if you're doing it all the time for everybody, every moment of the show,
it's not special anymore.
Yeah, it's not special anymore.
Well, I guess that's, I don't know, because now it could just be me thinking of the times I've been to a live event, and when you're there and the pyro goes off, you're like, yeah, the pyro went off.
Yeah,
I've seen that on television. But I guess you're right. At home, if you never went to a show, it does get kind of samey, But I mean, seeing Goldberg breathe smoke out of a torrent of sparklers is magnificent to me, and you can't tell me otherwise.
I mean, like a couple of weeks ago when the Undertaker made his debut again, what was it, on Raw? A couple of weeks back? Man, that moment when the lights go out and you hear the gong, and then the lights come back up and he's standing in the ring. I was like, oh, now that's wrestling.
You can tell
there's just
Paul
something
Heyman.
About The Undertaker still to this day. When that entrance happens, it's special.
He's what, like 85 years old now? He's like, how the hell is he still wrestling?
You know what's funny is like people will watch Brock Lesnar and like Seth Rollins. And Rollins will like give him that curb stomp deal. And people are like, oh, my God, he turned his head. He put his hand up. It's got to be fake, that chair. It looks so phony. But everyone believes that The Undertaker's dead and can shoot lightning.
Yeah.
Right. That's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and that's why the kind of the transition between the 80s era and Attitude era in WWF was the occupational era.
Yeah.
So, and that's where the Undertaker came from, you know.
That's a funny way to put it.
Repo Man, you had the Brooklyn Brawler, you had all of these people who had day jobs because Vince wouldn't pay them.
Well, that's what I Schwartz.
That's what I loved about the 80s era is you had those guys like Big Boss Man who would dress up like a cop, like he was a cop.
Right.
You know, and you had
I love Big Boss Man. He was one of my favorites. And he was a cop before he got started.
And, you know, you've got, like, Honky Tonk Man. And
I love that guy, too.
Like, Jake the Snake Roberts. Like, these personas that were just kind of larger than life. And I miss that era.
Yeah, and you still had that with the Attitude Era with, you know, the top guys who would just get unbelievable reactions. And I think that's one of the biggest things that's missing from mainstream wrestling now is no real like larger than life personalities that just make you stop and pay attention to the TV.
Yeah.
I mean, there are those larger than life personalities. Like as much as I don't like watching him wrestle, Brock Lesnar has that kind of aura around him to me.
He is one of the few. Yes.
You know,
yep.
Because when he shows up, everyone's like, oh, it's Brock Lesnar. And as much as people will crap on it on Twitter, everyone pays attention to it.
I hate that. I hate people. I can't stand when people are like, he sucks. He never shows up, as if they wouldn't take the same goddamn deal.
100%.
Exactly.
You know, to work. To
Don't
work
get mad at Lesnar. Get mad at WWE for giving him that contract.
Yeah. Right. They're mad at him for accepting. I mean, he's got a different contract now where he's got a lot more dates. Because he finally decided to actually not go back to UFC or whatever. But people get pestered him for accepting a deal for millions of dollars to work 10 to 12 nights a year.
Yeah.
I mean, not including pay-per-views. As like I'm saying, as if those people wouldn't take the same deal. Yeah. And I say and that, time, and I've said that before, and I've tweeted it directly to these people before that always say that stuff. And I always get something like, well, you bring up a good point, or I get no response. And I'm like, well, that just says it right there, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing I think a lot of just fans don't... I mean, I'm not even going to pretend I'm in the business, but the thing that a lot of fans don't even think about is the things that a performer has to do outside of the ring for their craft. He is not just sitting at home. He is working
out. That's
what
people think.
Right. He is just keeping that persona and that physique for when one of those 12 days happens.
Yeah.
So it's not like it's not hard. It is.
That's what people think, though. People think he just sits home and Vince McMahon says, okay, how about next Monday Night Raw? Okay, I'll be there, and that's it.
Right. No, and that's not how it works at all.
Yeah, that's extremely far from how it actually works.
Yeah, I mean, the dude probably has to work out probably 7-8 hours a day and eat like 10,000 calories a day.
Right.
I mean, that's got to be a job just in itself just to maintain that.
It's I don't want any more steak, but here I am eating it.
Just hang a cow in here, and I'll just nibble on it all day.
I'll just nibble on that.
Yeah. That's great.
but I just remember, like, when the Attitude Era, like, I just kind of remember, you know, just that kind of that shift when the wrestling that I loved kind of felt passé.
Yeah. I think that's a good word to use, considering that's what Vince McMahon used in that promo that Wally did before.
Yeah.
I almost think, like, I don't know, a lot of people disagree with me in this, but I think people that were not fans before Vince McMahon made that announcement thing, I almost think it brought more respect to the business from those kind of people, because here's the biggest name in the entire business. Despite Hulk Hogan's success, Vince McMahon is a bigger name than him. Vince McMahon Jr., at least, in my eyes.
Yeah.
But here's the biggest thing in the business going on TV saying, these are all characters. We run a television, you know, we make a television show. And, you know, we know that, whatever, the intelligent insulted thing or whatever. Like, I almost think that and things like that kind of brought in more respect from non-fans and maybe made some of them, you know, turn on the Monday Night Raw here and there or something.
Yeah.
And I think that is how a lot of people came to know it. I mean, I guess the Attitude Era might be either just before or soon after the Montreal Screwjob happened.
Yeah. And
because that's when...
That was the start of it.
Vince McMahon began, you know... I mean, it's weird whenever you hear people who are close to the situation talk about how the Brett screwed Brett promo was Vince really thought that he was going to look like the good guy in that. And because, you know, it's about the tradition. You are traditionally supposed to drop the belt before you leave to another company. And, you know, he wasn't going to do that. Bret Hart was not going to do that. And Vince is like, well, I'll just go on TV and explain this to everybody. And it did not work. But it created the Mr. McMahon.
Thank God it didn't work.
Yeah, it made arguably the biggest villain in, you know, that era of wrestling.
Yeah.
And it was
I would say it made the biggest villain in wrestling, period.
Exactly. I 100%.
Not just in that era, because he comes out on TV in 2019 and people boo him instantly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because, true. I mean, here's a guy that before then, if you didn't know a whole lot about the ins and outs of the wrestling business, was the just the commentator. He was the guy that was in front of WrestleMania, whatever, you know, the unstoppable object versus, you know, and he was that guy.
That was another thing that the commentators back then, like, I loved the duo of Vince McMahon and Jesse the Body Ventura.
Well, today, Vince, we're going to be looking at some of the best of the best. I mean, well, he's right about that.
Those that they made a great team as commentators.
Yeah, but you can't.
And you had Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah.
And
Bobby Heenan.
Yeah, they're hanging from the rafters here today.
He's bleeding profusely.
I can't do a Bobby Heenan, though. Yeah. But I do want to say that in the Attitude Era, we had the King and JR, and that is one of the greatest commentating teams of all time.
Their chemistry was amazing.
I can't do a Bobby Heenan impression either, but I'll tell you one of my favorite Bobby Heenan lines was, like, they used to do live shows on Monday nights from a studio in Stanford or whatever when primetime wrestling changed formats. And sometimes they would, like, just talk to the crowd or whatever and say someone's name and how you're doing, blah, blah. And Bobby Heenan looks at one guy and says, sir, is that your wife next to you? And he goes, yep. And the guy and then he says, how long have you guys been married? And I think the woman, or maybe it might have been the husband, said 22 years. And Heenan goes, you know, if you'd have killed her on your wedding night, you'd be out by now. And I was like, I must have been like, I don't know, 13 or 14. I'm like, Jesus, what did he just say? Is that true? Like, I can't believe it.
Oh, man.
Bobby Heenan was fantastic.
You know who I miss, too, is Mean Gene Okerlund, man.
Ah, yes. Mean Gene.
Holy balls.
I love going back and watching all those, like, compilation, you know, videos of Mean Gene.
The blooper reels?
Oh, yeah.
The blooper reels?
Those blooper reels are great. Put that cigarette out.
Did you see that, the one where the logo fell off of the
Was it? He was interviewing, like, Rick Rude or something.
Yeah, hello, today we are here with Rick Rude, and what in the fuck was that?
Yeah, and if anybody is listening to this that is, you know, under, I'd say probably... 30 years old, and you've never seen any of those old promos back in the 80s with Mean Gene, go back, just go down a YouTube rabbit hole of Mean Gene Okerlund and Randy Macho Man Savage and
the
cream of the crop and cup of coffee. in the big time are two of the absolute best promos ever cut.
I mean, the cup of coffee one's kind of incomprehensible, but it's still amazing.
It's like, how do you come up with that? Like, I don't... something.
Cup of coffee is a quote-unquote insider term, that's one of the first ones I've ever heard used on television, which obviously I didn't realize until I was actually in the business, but... That's like basically it. You know, it means what it means. He was around for a cup of coffee. Like he was here for 5 minutes, and nobody cares about him now. Something like that. But at the time, I was like, "The hell does that mean?" Like, yeah. Do they have coffee together and then he left? Or I don't understand.
And the Ultimate Warrior, man, dude, those promos with him were batshit crazy.
The best one was WrestleMania 6, where he wanted to hijack Hulk Hogan's plane and like throw the pilots out of the door and then drive. He was going to fly the plane and he was going to crash it into the Skydome Arena, killing both of them. What the hell? How do you win the title if you're dead and your opponent's dead? Oh, that was such a great promo.
Well, the plane would be pinning him, presumably.
Well, if they're both on it, who knows?
Yeah. I do think that does bring up a good point, is that the commentary teams do make wrestling, like, they make it more enjoyable, or they can break it too. Like, because to me, the Attitude Era would not have been successful or as successful without the team of Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, because they played off each other so well. Because when JR would get so into what was going on and just yell almost incomprehensible things, or just yelling Stone Cold a lot, you know, it drew you into it. And then Lawler would make some type of politically incorrect mark, and JR's like, well, shut up.
I'm so happy they have another JR type guy in Mauro Ranallo, because he does all that yelling, screaming now, and he's one of the best. And I'm kind of partial to Nigel McGuinness, because him and I are very good friends, but Mauro Ranallo is awesome, although Nigel's my favorite member of that team. But I love that he yells and screams. And then I guess they have, I don't know if they have like a separate GoPro on the commentator table, but they show like clips of him on like WWE's Twitter and like WWE.com of just him screaming and yelling. It's the fucking, it's the funniest thing, but it's so good.
Yeah. Now, Ranallo, I think as far as current WWE commentators, he's easily the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, just thinking back, one of my favorite calls in all of wrestling is when JR says, as God is my witness, he is broken in half.
Yeah. Oh, man, there's so many great moments.
We mentioned ECW before. Do you guys remember when they did 97 on Monday Night Raw?
They did what?
I remember, I wasn't watching at the time, but I have since gone back and I've seen some highlights of it.
One of my favorite calls from that part, I think it was not Jim Ross, it was Jerry Lawler and Vince McMahon, the thing on commentary, and Taz, like, I don't know, hopped over the railing and Jerry Lawler goes, that guy looked a lot bigger on the Lucky Charms box.
Oh, yeah.
One of the funniest things I'd ever heard at that point.
Oh, old school Lawler was great.
Oh, man.
I remember when they did when WWE invaded the ECW arena and Lawler was in the ring. ECW fans were just losing their mind.
I stole that line and used it in six or seven promos when he said this building ought to be made of toilet paper because there's nothing in it but shit.
Yeah.
I have stolen that line. That's like my most stolen promo line. I must have said it like seven times, and it always gets the same reaction, which is amazing. It's as if people have never heard that line before. And I've said it in the same building once, or twice in the same building at one point for one company, and they still go for it as if they never heard it before. I'm like, man, either they just figured out what the hell I'm saying, or they didn't listen to me last time.
And that's one thing, just kind of tangentially, that seemed to work the best during that time frame.
I don't even know what that word
all
means.
Of the different, all of the different invasion angles. Because, you know, Jim, the King being at ECW Arena was an invasion, you know?
Oh, yeah, that was awesome.
I mean, we had ECW invading WWE. We had the NWO invading WCW. I mean, it was, we had DX trying to invade WCW that one time.
Did Lawler show up at ECW Arena before they did the ECW stuff on Raw, or was it, did ECW show up first?
I really believe he showed up there first. And the reason why I think that is because, Raven was still a part of ECW when, when he showed up the first time around, but Raven had left ECW by the time they did the Raw.
Oh, weird. Yeah, he was in WCW at the time, I think.
Yeah.
Well, as we're moving on, we're getting close to the end of the show. I do have some emails that I want to read. And Derek, do you want to read this first one, and then we'll kind of leapfrog?
Yeah, are they in the Google Doc?
Yeah, I got them all. They're down at the bottom. And starts off with the one from Picola Asian, Brandon Rutledge.
Rutledge. He and I went to a WWE show a couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
All right. Hey, guys, this is Brandon Rutledge, you know, the clown that leaves super long comments on almost every episode of Nerd Cave Retro, but I do enjoy hearing them. I thought I would give my two cents on which era of wrestling was better. It's a really tough call. I was born towards the end of the 80s, and I was on the side of WCW during the Monday Night Wars. But thanks to the WWE Network, YouTube, and countless hours of research, I know quite a bit about both. He says, on one hand, the golden era brought pro wrestling to the mainstream. And on the other hand, the Attitude Era helped solidify it as a major form of entertainment. To him, the Attitude Era has more memorable moments and matches. The WrestleMania cards were better by comparison in most cases. Though both had a long list of memorable wrestlers and personalities, the Attitude Era arguably has the better, more memorable set. To a degree, The Rock is still relevant today. And adding to the theme of the podcast, Attitude Era video games were definitely better than Golden Era WWF.
Well, yeah. Yeah, those WrestleMania
games. I almost forgot about the games that came out during that time, because I loved like No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000 for the N64. Yep, yeah. Those were both fun.
Which were much better than In Your House and wrestling.
Oh my God, WrestleMania the arcade game.
Yeah.
Oh, I did want to mention that I had a really good time when I went up to visit Joey last year. And we're in his, his big nerd room in there, which is awesome. And he's had this box of wrestling magazines from the 80s.
Oh, and, God, I still have it in the same spot.
I was like, man, I haven't read these. Like, I had a subscription to WWF Magazine when I was a kid, and I just sat there and just read through all those. And they had the little sections in there with the merchandise sections. Mm. And I was wonder what would happen if I sent some money in, like a check for, for like a Macho Man t-shirt. Be like, would they actually send me something? I think that'd be awesome. And the next one comes from One Wing Angel 2004, and this is Tyler Watson. He says, hey guys, it's Tyler. Now, I'm assuming that when we are talking about this, we are not limiting ourselves to just WWE and including all popular promotions. So in Wrestle Debate 2019, while both eras are great and important, I have to give the edge to the Attitude Era. Simply put, it was the biggest that pro wrestling has been in the mainstream public consciousness. Yes, Hulkamania ran wild during the 80s, but the Attitude Era brought us the likes of Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock and great factions like DX and the NWO. Speaking of stars from the previous era, the AE gave guys like Hogan, Macho Man, Ric Flair, and Legion of Doom and the Big Boss Man a breath of new life. And with healthy competition on TV, it caused the Big Two to innovate their product to get the most eyes out of it. I think that's something that, with the new wrestling promotion that Jericho is a part of now, I think that's going to help a lot as far as, competition, because competition breeds innovation.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really been missing the last decade or so, is good competition. He says he has vivid memories of having TNT and USA on channel switch on Monday nights, so he could easily swap between them. The AE changed the face of the business. Kayfabe was allowed to crack and allowed the audience more into the world and helped it build stories. He could ramble on for a while, but he'll leave it here. Looking forward to hearing the episode. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold says so. Glass shatters.
Down, down.
You can go ahead and read the next one, and then I'll read the last one. We actually have a co-owner from the Diamond Championship Wrestling I saved for last.
Oh,
nice. So our next one comes to us from Nate, who is at Retro Gaming Dev on Twitter.
I love this guy. I love Nate.
Yeah, he's great. I would have to go with 80s era all day, mostly because that is really what I watched when I watched wrestling with family and friends and played all the older games from that time. Looking forward to the show.
And the last one we have is from Laura Hellstrom. My name is Laura Miller. I am the co-owner of Diamond Championship Wrestling. My husband, Gene Miller, and I run professional wrestling shows all along the Gulf Coast. And I can say that they're very good because that's the ones that me and Wally go to a lot.
Yeah.
Here along the coast. My choice for better era would always be the Attitude. The late 90s are for me what gave me my appreciation for wrestling. As a young girl, no one in my family liked wrestling. And at the age of 9, I would go down the block to my grandmother's sister's house and watch wrestling with her on her little black and white TV, yelling and screaming at my favorite, Ric Flair. Woo! As I grew older, I would go to my male cousin's home and we'd push his two large couches together, and that would become our wrestling ring. I was always Rowdy Roddy Piper. Oh, she's a girl after my own heart. Now, the 90s gave me Stone Cold, who drew me to the television like a magnet as he fought against the man's authority in general. Funny how I ended up marrying hard time Gene Austin, in parentheses Miller, and now co-running our own successful pro wrestling show. Gene's been a pro wrestler for over 30 years. The Attitude Era carries over into our show as we run our entertainment with the people in mind. I'm glad she wrote in, man.
I am too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you, everybody.
I want to go to one of their shows.
Yeah, thank you all to everybody that wrote in to the show. But yeah, me and Wally go to the Diamond Championship Wrestling shows, and
Her and I talk on Twitter. Her and I talk on Twitter through Wally, our mutual friend. That's how we started talking. And I want to go to one of their shows at some point.
I
want to be booked on one, but I can't wrestle anymore. So
if they need
something else, I'll do that.
Yeah, you can manage, or you know,
you gotta talk them into it, man. I'm in.
I think they should have it where me and Wally do live commentating at the shows.
I swear to God, I would love to do that.
Oh my God.
Oh, that would be great.
Last week they had a triple threat match for the championship with the person who got pinned leave DCW.
Wasn't somebody's last match or something?
Right.
Okay, yeah. I look at your picture every time you say you're going. I always look for like the following day for the pictures.
Yeah, well, it's the you know, well, they happen to love me doing the picture, so I'm gonna keep doing it. And but man, that match was a barn burner. Koloff flew outside of the ring. I had to scream, "Oh my God!" Because I've never seen him so much as go to the top rope, let alone jump over the top rope.
That's scary.
It was.
He's a big boy.
Him, like Charles West and Riott was like, oh no. It was great.
So we have it all set up. Joey can be a manager. Wally and Jason can be the commentary team. And because of the name, I can be the on-air general manager.
That's right.
Diamond. That's pretty clever there.
That's right. I didn't even think about that.
Diamond.
Ooh. Dude, my wheels are turning right now.
I think we have something.
Yeah. Wally, you should pitch that idea.
I'll try to do so. They've got me performing in a couple weeks.
Really?
What are you doing?
I'm going to open a wrestling show with stand-up comedy.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like wrestling performing. I was like, dude, don't get hurt.
No, I'm not going to. No, I can't do that. In fact, that's part of my set, explaining, you know, how like my entrance would be the end of the match.
Well, me and Wally actually had an idea not too long ago that we should be a tag team. But our whole gimmick is that we don't know that we're wrestlers. We just kind of end up in the wrestling ring.
I'm a fan.
And we always lose. So that would be our gimmick.
I always want to do this gimmick where I was in a tag team with a guy that I was a rival with, but not the way like everyone does that. Like two guys are thrown together that don't like each other. Yeah. But I wanted to do it where like, when we're rivals, we're just rivals. But when we're a tag team, we both have masks on and we don't know that the other guy is the other guy. Even though
that would be clever.
the comedy element would have to be that it's blatantly obvious. Like, my tattoos are visible. So I come out in the first match as Joey Image, and then I throw on a mask that's, of course, green, white, and red because I'm Italian, and I'm then known as Ultimo Guido, and so my tattoos are exposed, so it's plainly obvious to everyone else except for the other guy that it's me, and he doesn't know either. I don't know, but I always want to do that with this guy John that I'm friends with, Johnny Toxic. He goes by. We've been friends for a million years, and when he's one of the guys where every time we wrestle each other, we beat the piss out of each other just because we're so close that we're comfortable doing that. And I always thought he's a Mexican guy. He's like half Mexican, half white or whatever. So he would have been Ultimo Mexicano, and I would have been Ultimo Guido. And that's we just awesome. Don't know it's each other. And then we take the masks off and we just kill each other like in other matches. But we always like there has to be something backstage where, like, you know, somehow we just don't see each other until we have our masks on and then we don't know it's each other.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's great.
It's almost I would love Superman to have done something glasses. Like that.
Yeah, I was just thinking that same thing.
I feel like that would be so hard to keep up, though, and, like, to keep up with.
Yeah. But it'd be fun, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess we're at the end of the show now, and we've definitively found out that the 80s is better than the Attitude Era.
Well,
I'm pretty sure that's not what we determined.
Well, I think they both have their merits, and we've come to a stalemate.
Right. I would agree with that. All wrestling is good wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're both great eras. You know, it's funny because...
Unless you ask Jim Cornette.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I need to know what the issue with him is, because I'm a fan and he's 99% correct all the time.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't like any of the new product, basically, because...
No, I know what the issue is. I'm being sarcastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, okay.
I listen to him twice a week, every week.
So do I.
I know it's not the cool thing to do to listen to him, but the people that call him irrelevant are not nearly as well known as he's been for 40 years now.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean the people in the business that say it. Like, fans can say whatever they want, but the people that are in the business, I'm saying that normally call him irrelevant, it doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, but the thing with me, the way I look at Jim Cornette is that he has a real point of view, and he has evidence to back it up, but I still don't agree with 50% of what he says.
Yeah, I don't agree with 100% of what he says, but I don't disagree with you know, I definitely agree with more than half of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But a lot of people I think don't put into account the fact that he doesn't just say things to say them. He bases his opinions off of 40 plus years behind the scenes.
Right.
Whereas most fans base their opinions on however many years never being anywhere behind the scenes, just watching on television.
Yeah, just being at
a live show. They have zero experience and zero training, but yet they're telling a guy who's been around for over 40 years and been successful, not just been around for 40 years, but been successful for 40 plus years, that, like, this is the way it should be and you don't know what you're talking about. And I always think that that's crazy to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's his argument, for those who are not in the know, is that wrestling should be essentially presented and presented in a way that
a serious competition.
It is a serious competition against two professional athletes. Correct. Or two or more professional athletes. And nothing wrong with that.
No, I don't disagree with him on that.
Too many people do, though. I think that's the issue.
It really is an issue.
That's a whole different story for a whole another episode, but I could go on for hours about that.
Correct, yes.
But it's not. It's like you can't even go publicly and say, "Well, I agree with that," because then suddenly you're an asshole too. It's like I can't just agree with a guy, but still be this other guy's friend who doesn't agree with him. I have right. to have one. It's like fans think you have to have one side or the other. I don't. Like, if you go to my Twitter, I have a tweet, the pinned tweet that says, "Look, I've been in this for a long time. I'm not looking at it the same way 99% of fans do. I just can't. I'm so programmed and conditioned to, like, things that don't make sense to whoever's yelling at me may make sense to me. Like, it's not, you know, it's not like I'm big timing people or Cornetsby type or whatever. Just look at it a different way, and it's okay to look at things more than one, from more than one angle. But yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of people think it's not okay, and it's not. Not only is it not okay, I shouldn't say that. A lot of people think it's not possible.
Hmm. Yeah,
not everything's in black and white.
Correct. And I wish I was that. Wish I was that short and sweet with my words.
Right.
You say it much better than I do, though.
I don't. I disagree with that.
Well, before we go, did you want to promote this? The Diamond Championship Finals.
Yeah, I was actually gonna say that the comedy show that I'm gonna be doing is gonna be September 28th at the Pascagoula VFW. It is the King of Diamonds final, so you're gonna have a. It's basically their pay per view.
Awesome.
I'm gonna be opening it up with 15 to 20 minutes of comedy. Honestly, don't know what I'm going to be doing because that audience is going to be a vastly different audience than the one I'm used to.
Yes.
And it has to be family friendly. So.
Good luck.
Right. I mean, I think my cat fighting the snake thing would work.
Maybe. So what about you, Joe? You got anything you want to pimp before we get out of here tonight?
You can find me on Twitter at Joey Image. Actually, everything is Joey Image TV now. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Twitch is at Joey Image TV. I have a brand new podcast that just started last week. We did episode 2 last night. It's called Sopranopedia. It's myself and my best man, he is my best man at the wedding, but my best friend Chris Decker, referee Chris Decker. And we go through every episode of The Sopranos in order, one by one.
Awesome.
We will be at, I also want to plug, not my project, but we will be there as part of press, SopranosCon.com, a big 2-day, Sopranos convention celebrating. This is the 2019 is the 20th year of The Sopranos. So, they are celebrating basically the 20 years. There is a ton of cast members that are going to be there. Myself and Chris are going to interview every single one of them except for one. And we will, and I'm not talking about Gandolfini, except for one that's going to be there. But so we'll be there Saturday and Sunday, and all the interviews will be on our podcast. We'll be posted on the podcast feed. So check out on Twitter at Sopranopedia, no S, just Sopranopedia, like Wikipedia. And Sopranopedia at gmail.com. And again, you can find me at Joey Image TV on all platforms.
Fantastic. What about you, Derek? Anything you want to pimp before we leave tonight?
Yeah, so the Derek Diamond Experience returns next week. You can follow that show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at D Diamond Podcast. If you want to check out the latest news with my short film, The Parker Syndrome, that's Facebook and Instagram at The Parker Syndrome. And you can follow me personally on Twitter at Derek_Diamond.
Only thing I want to pimp is if you're in the Biloxi area or anywhere near the Biloxi area, come watch me and Wally doing open mic comedy nights at the Wayward Kraken in downtown Biloxi every Monday night at 7:30, except for this Monday. They're not doing it for Labor Day, but every other Monday after that, 7:30. I think that's about it. So I'm going to go ahead and play this and get out of here tonight.
Love it.
You can find us at nerdcaveretro.com. You can email us at nerdcaveretro@gmail.com. We're on Instagram and Twitter at nerdcaveretro, individually at jfantastic, at Derek_Diamond, at joeyimageTV, and at The Real Big Wall. We are at Facebook, facebook.com/nerdcaveretro. Go to our Patreon at patreon.com/nerdcaveretro. Get us back up to that $50 level, and we'll do shows like this every month as an extra episode and not just a regular episode. So if you want that, go throw us a buck a month and get us back up to that $50 level. And as if you can't do that, then leave us a review wherever you listen to the show. So, Garrett, please tell everyone what it's all about.
And that's the bottom line, because Nerd Cave Retro said so.
That's right. And do you smell what Jay Funktastic is cooking?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Woo!
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.